Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom.
Big snow today, dude.
Snow is coming. Yeah, snow is coming.
You know, they were predicting between, 8 inches and 2 feet, depending on what happens. And I'm constantly amazed about weather forecasts. And I know it's kind of hard to predict. But, it's like, can you imagine if you had to run your business the way they run the forecast?
Well, that's what they say. You know, thank God that my surgeon, my doctor, is a lot more specific about things.
Yeah. I know it's it could be this, it could be that, yeah.
But there's a lot of stress involved in this radio job because we record earlier in the week,
yeah,
and our listeners are listening on Sunday morning.
Sure.
So for all we know, we have all this doom and gloom about 15 inches of snow, but who knows? Maybe Sunday people will be outside in their shorts and it will be 100 degrees.
Well, I'm hoping to be in California by then, you know. My plane leaves early this morning.
Oh my goodness, you're not going to be here to experience the snow with me?
I'm going to try not to. I'm praying that the flight gets out, because if it doesn't, I'll be stuck in the airport. And you know, if the flight doesn't get out, what am I going to do? I mean, it's going to be hard to get home. You know, what Uber is going to take you in the middle of a snowstorm, you know?
So it becomes interesting because, you know, you go, oh, I'm going out to California, so, you know, it shouldn't be any problems. But the problem lies in getting the aircrafts into New York so that you can board and then exit.
Well, it should be in overnight, you know. I mean, because my plane leaves at 7 in the morning, which I kind of did by accident. I wasn't really thinking. I usually leave a little later than that, but it turns out it could be a happy occurrence because, you know, once they can get that thing off the ground, you fly up and over the clouds, you know, over the storm, so it shouldn't be a problem.
I think the main, I guess there's somewhat of it, the in-air situation, but I guess the biggest part of it is the icing and stuff on the
runway. Runway. Yeah, well, good news is if you get snowed in, this is the perfect opportunity to make some, you know, pasta from scratch or to, you know, do some braising, you know, do some cooking, slow cooking, you know, because you're going to have nothing but time on your hands, right? And hopefully, if you have an electric range, it won't go out. It's a great time to gather the kids around, too, if you have children. You know, and show them how to make pasta by hand do some cooking, make some salads. It'd be fun time to kind of hang in the house and do that. And I think that, you know, with our lifestyles the way they are, it seems simpler. You know, I grew up in the Donna Reed, Ozzie and Harriet generation, and there was a lot of home, you know, the wives were home and cooking and stuff, and we have this crazy lifestyle now where everybody's out all the time. And it's a good opportunity for everybody to sit down and eat, you know, a meal together and kind of, you know, come together as one as a family and just, you know, enjoy that time. You know, if you're going to have to stay in the house, you might as well have, you know, fun doing it and, you know, get creative and, you know, maybe shut the TV off and do some things together, you know, that, you know, you don't know, and shut the screens off, you know, keep the kids off the screens for a couple of hours, you know, which is hard to do. I mean, these kids are as addicted to, the internet as the adults are.
So I don't know what brought me to this thought, but that whole dialogue you just shared. My sister is 3 years younger than I, and growing up in Oceanside in the 60s and 70s, she had an Easy Bake oven.
Oh, yeah, with the light bulb?
Yeah. Yeah. But it really cooked.
Oh, yeah. Well, light bulbs get hot. Touch one, you know what
and
I mean?
And I'm trying to dig deep to figure out. I know there was like, you know, a regular cake, you know, like a sponge cake type thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you baked it in a round tin. And I believe there was also, I'm sure there was hundreds of things, but the things that come to mind is pretzels. You made your own Bavarian twisted pretzel, yeah, or whatever.
Cookies too, no?
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, how do you get enough heat out of a light bulb to...
Well, if it's an enclosed space, and yeah, I mean, have you ever touched a light bulb that's been on for a while?
True.
Yeah, I mean, they generate you know, a fair amount of heat. So,
but that brings about a cool memory. I, if I'm not mistaken, it was either a light blue or a pink, or maybe a combination of both. But I enjoyed playing with it. So maybe that was a sign of what was to come.
Are you an early gourmet?
Maybe, but you know, I was just Googling something to talk to you about, because yesterday I had the chance to dine at Paces out in, I guess it's considered
Smith. Hop Hog?
Hop Hog?
Mm-hmm.
And a fantastic restaurant. Always, always done well. And they have a really incredible lunch crowd. There's people sitting at the bar. There's a room. There's tables at the bar. There's the bar itself. And
then
there's the dining room. And it was funny because... we were meeting with some other business associates, and we forgot to make the reservation. So we get there, and you know, when you come drive up, the parking lot's packed.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm starting to sweat. And we walk in and go, oh, you know, we're going to be six. We forgot to make a reservation or whatever. Guy goes, well, don't really have anything in the dining room. Maybe I can put something together for you in the bar. And he goes, unless... you're with the group that I already sat. But it worked out well. But the story I want to share, and it's inquisitive, is I've been known to dine out, go to a political event or some sort of group dinner, or privately. And if we're getting steak, and I'm not the biggest steak guy, but I enjoy it every so often, I'll ask if they can bring out a steak sauce. And I get ostracized.
Really?
Oh, the meat should have enough of a flavor to, you know, make you happy or whatever. So I'm just reading a little bit about Paces, and they go, they're a steak restaurant, and they go, nothing arouses the appetite more than a sizzling, juicy, tender steak. And they go on to say, our meat is different, and we'll taste, and you'll taste why. But it goes down to saying, you know, our marinated steaks are bathed with a secret brewed sauce.
Secret.
So, but what I'm getting at is, so when I order a steak,
mm-hmm,
and it comes out and I ask for steak sauce and get yelled at,
right,
I guess I'm putting flavor to something that's already been prepared with flavor. So how does that differ from marinating a steak and preparing a steak with a sauce? Because it's... you're doing something to the meat to add to the taste.
Of course.
So does it matter if you do it before or if you do it after?
No, it doesn't. I go through this all the time with people. You know, oh, you must go crazy when somebody puts ketchup on a steak. I could care less what you put on it. Once you buy the steak, it's yours. Do whatever you want, you know? It's the same thing with wine. Drink what you like. Who cares, you know? But these people stand on these ceremonial issues, you know? And to me, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, you know, why put sauce on a chicken? Shouldn't a chicken, you know, stand on its own? Why put sauce on a pork chop? What's the difference, you know? We make a steak. I make my own steak sauce. I have, you know, everybody asks me, oh, is that, what's the name of that restaurant, the steak restaurant?
Peter Luger's.
Is it Peter Luger's? No, it's Tommy Shawnell's, you know? And they look at me like I'm out of my mind, you know? But it's, I think A1 tastes pretty good, by the way. You know, does it mask the flavor of a sirloin? You know, if you're sitting there and if you have three steaks and you want to compare the difference between a Aokashi Wagyu, a prime, and a CAB, you know, choice, then all right, you're not going to mask it. You're going to see what each one tastes like. But if you're just out to enjoy yourself, I mean, why do you put ketchup on French fries? Why do you put, you know, ketchup on a burger? It's the same thing to me. I don't really care. You know, I think that you should just enjoy whatever you bought to the fullest extent possible. You know, if it's ketchup on your steak, go get them. I mean, if that's what, you know, floats your boat, and then what's the harm? I don't understand why everybody gets so crazy about this stuff.
So one of the, I mean, they have, again, an incredible menu, and they have, a separate section for lunch selections, burgers and sandwiches and whatever. But they're also, they just do things right. So a bunch of us got the burger that comes with French fries. We said we didn't want French fries because we get a salad. And rather than just like lettuce and tomato on the side when they serve the burger, they actually served a salad course.
Nice.
Which was pretty cool. But I wanted to get into one of the appetizers we had was baked clams. I keep talking about baked clams. And you explained to me the difference between clams casino and something. We talked about that last week. So traditionally, a lot of times, the baked clams are smaller.
Right. Little necks.
Okay, little necks. Paces ends up using a jumbo clam.
Top necks.
I'll bet you it was almost the diameter of, if you sliced a softball. It was pretty big.
Oh, huge.
It was big. But what I found what was interesting and what always intrigues me with baked clams is if it's a whole clam, theirs was, they didn't dice it up, but it was pieces of clam. It's rather than just the whole clam. I guess because it was so big.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I hope it was chopped, because otherwise you'd be doing a Heimlich maneuver on one of your
Diced, you know, like I guess a clam's casino might have been. But it was just nice. But
he does, you know, I know Jimmy Pace. We belong to the same club out east, the same golf club. And it's funny because we used to play the same, you know, it's a restaurant day, Monday mornings, you know. He'd be coming. I used to get there earlier than him, but I'd be coming up, you know, on 10, and he'd be going off on 1, and we'd always wave to each other, you know. But he runs great spot, man. He, you know, Pace's Steakhouse is up there. I think it's up there with the big ones, you know.
You just answered one of a perplexing void in my mind.
You're welcome.
So you're talking about Baiting Hollow.
Yeah.
And when I do events at Baiting Hollow, 9 out of 10 times, Pace's is catering the steak.
I wonder how that happened.
Now it all comes together.
Yeah, you know what happened? I probably would have gotten that thing if I just played golf a little later, because the manager probably isn't in by the time I, you know, get through. No, he's a good guy, Jimmy. And like I said, he runs a great place, you know. And you know, lunch is probably busy over there because you got all that office buildings there in Hapag, you know, and you get the industrial parks and, you know, there's a lot of people. You know, it's the same thing when we were at Jewel, you know, we had the 110 corridor. It was crazy. We used to do a couple of hundred lunches a day.
But today, in today's world, there's not a lot of lunch. The high-end restaurants don't always serve lunch.
Yeah. Well, lunch is a pain in the neck. And you know, a lot of times you're not busy. If you're in an area where... you know, like I remember Mario's in Hapag there on Vanderbilt Parkway or whatever that is. You know, he was there for years and years, maybe 30 years. And I used to go to for lunch with a friend of mine once in a while who was had a business out there. And he was always packed. And it was that classic Italian restaurant, you know, with the tablecloths and, you know, they make the Caesar salad at the table and all that stuff. It was a lot of fun. And but, you know, he was in an area where you had, you know, you had people there during the day. You know, when I was in Locust Valley, you know, to open for lunch would be a fool's errand. There's nobody there, you know, and all you're doing is wasting, you know, time and labor and everything else, you know. So I think that the decision whether you open for lunch or not is probably really based on location. You know, if you're in that 110 corridor, if you're in Hapag business area, or maybe Bohemia, you know, that exit 57 there, it's what's that, Vets Highway. You know, you probably got a shot at getting people in. But if you're, you know, if you're not, you know, if you're in a sleepy village or something, yeah, I don't know if you want to, you know, open up. I mean, there's two schools of thought. Somebody once said to me, well, I'm paying rent, I might as well be open. Well, that's great, unless you're losing money. You know, what's the point? So I think that, you know, even out east, you know, I'm not open for lunch in the places out east, even in the summer. I mean, I open on the weekends for lunch. But, you know, no thank you.
It's funny, though. Again, back to Baiting Hollow. Again, usually there's a steak table that, again, I mentioned was...
Paces?
curated by Paces. They also do a pretty big raw bar, and I wonder who they use for that.
They probably do it themselves, I would think. You know, it's easy enough to order clams and oysters or whatever. You know, opening them is the real issue with raw bars, you know, so if you get
it. Well, many times at the golf outings, they have somebody shucking, yeah. You know, right on, which is pretty cool. For some reason, this discussion leads me to, who was the restaurateur that, with the big mustache, and was it Hicksville or Plainview or that closed? We always tell the story as he comes to the table with the vegetables.
Oh, Luigi Q.
Luigi Q, I couldn't think of
it. Love that. Luigi. Luigi was one of the most unique restaurant characters I've ever met, and Lord knows I've met my share. You know, I can write a book on just restaurant people that were completely different than the rest of the population, sometimes in a good way, sometimes in a bad way. But Luigi Q, I loved him. He was Luigi was hardcore, you know. If he didn't like the way you looked, he wouldn't let you in a restaurant. He wouldn't allow children in there. He had a bunch of rules. It was hilarious to watch. And you couldn't come in shorts. You know, you had to behave yourself. It was hilarious. But and every time I went in, he tried to pick up my girlfriend, you know, at the table. He was this character and a half, you know. But sadly, I think Luigi retired, you know?
He did. There's now a restaurant called Ficarra,
yeah.
Which is where I was going. I wanted to know if you're familiar with it or whatever.
I'm familiar with the menu. I looked it up. I was actually, there's a music store across the street from there that I frequent, you know, that I do. The guitar tech does all the work on my guitars. And so, you know, I'm in the area, and I saw it. I said, oh, I want to see what, you know, the menu was. And I looked it up. And nice menu, you know, it's just, you know, kind of a fun Italian place.
Yeah, it's described as an upscale Italian-American restaurant in Hicksville, mm-hmm. offering authentic Sicilian-inspired cuisine with focus on family tradition, bold flavors, and handmade pastas.
Nice.
They talk about one thing that I never actually assimilated with each other, Sicilian short ribs.
Well, I mean, I guess they make them in Sicily also, you know, so does it say what preparation it is?
No.
It just says Sicilian short ribs. There's no description.
It just says it provides a fine dining experience with dishes like Sicilian ribs, fresh seafood, and classic Italian entrees.
Yeah, if you pull up the menu, there's probably some kind of explanation on that.
Oh, we can do that. But, obviously he retired, but I forget who took over the restaurant or took over the premises.
I miss seeing him. I used to stop in there and have a glass of wine with him every once in a while. We talk about food, and he was as committed. He was actually a talented chef, Luigi Q. I mean, he worked the front of the house, and he had a couple of Spanish guys in the kitchen that he trained up real well, and they did a great job over there. I mean, the food was good. The first time I met him was probably about 30 years ago, and I was taken there by the people at Banffy, Lars Light, and trying to think of who else was with us. It doesn't matter. Anyway, we started lunch at 11:30 and we finished lunch at about 5:45. You know, it was one of those marathon sessions with wine and you know, after dinner drinks and limoncello and all. It was just crazy, you know. But I just loved his enthusiasm and his commitment to the business and as crazy as he was with the kids and the shorts and all of that stuff. There's something to be respected about that. He wanted a certain clientele, and that's what he was going to get. And you know, I mean, whether you agree or disagree, you know, you certainly have to take your hat off to someone. I was saying this to somebody the other day, that you get the market that you target. Excuse me. If you target a high-end market, you're going to get a high-end market. You target low, you're going to get low. And Luigi just, he had a sense in his head about how he wanted his restaurant to be run. And who he wanted in there, and he followed through. And, you know, for that, part of me says he's nuts, because, I mean, you kind of need everybody these days. The other part of me says, you know what, good for you, dude. You know what I mean? You took a stand and made it. I mean, there's places now in the city where I remember reading there was a tasting menu place in Brooklyn called Blanca. And, I mean, it's 12 seats, 15-seat tasting bar, whatever it was, and he had a menu that was like eight or nine courses, whatever it was. And on his website, he says, listen, if you have allergies, dairy, you know, gluten, this, that, and the other thing, we can't accommodate you, and this probably isn't the restaurant for you. And, you know, I kind of get it, you know what I mean? It's hard to, you know, when you're doing a specific thing like that, it's kind of hard to change it all up. You know, I do these dinners all the time with, you know, tasting menu dinners, or I'll go to, you know, they'll auction me off at a charity event, and I'll go to somebody's house. And, you know, you're going to do a six-course let's say six courses. We'll keep it simple, right? A six course for eight people. That's 48 plates you're going to make, you know, which is a lot. And, you know, if Sally can't eat scallops and John doesn't like fish and Jimmy can't eat meat and this one doesn't like pork, you know, you're changing all these things around. It's a nightmare. And so I think that if you get invited to one of those dinners and you have issues, that's fine. If you have it, that may not be the dinner for you. Maybe you should just wait until something more, you know, specific comes your way. And I think that's where, you know, the communication between, you know, the customer and the restaurant or the chef gets muddled, you know. Because all of a sudden they'll show up and I can't eat that. Can you change it? I mean, I did a wine dinner last night out at the new place out at South Old Social. And one of the ladies, you know, couldn't eat meat and there was one of the didn't eat shellfish. And so it was two courses that had to be changed. And, you know, it's not a big deal if it's one person, you know, it's fine. You know, we'll accommodate it. But you should kind of let people know ahead of time, you know, if you have an issue like that so they can be prepared. Anyway, that's my little rant on that.
So just since you mentioned South Hold Social,
yeah.
And what is the business plan of that? Is it Monday through Sunday?
The business plan is to not go broke. That's my business plan. That's the one I use all the time.
Is it open 7 days?
Not now. No. It's open Thursday through Sunday at the moment, 7 days in the summer. South Old Social is going to be one of those places. It's a beautiful old restored home. You know, it was a big house, you know, like a Victorian house. But it's right on Main Road in South Old, just east of the village. And on the north side of the street, you got the coordinates. I'll go into the menu. But, you know, my partner opened this up about two, three years ago with a pastry chef from the city who's a very well-known guy. Anyway, didn't work out. Partnership didn't work out. So he called me and asked me if I would come and help him fix it, you know. So I'm doing that. But South Old Social is going to be one of those kind of fun places where you can go and get sort of high-end stuff, but it's not so formal. You know, there's a lot of small plates there that you can share and have fun with, and some interesting things that we're going to do table side. You know, there's going to be a one big steak on the menu if you're that guy or that group of guys or guys and girls who like meat. You know, you'll be able to get a tomahawk steak or a porterhouse or something big like that. You know, because there's really no steakhouses on the North Fork. You know, there's I think the closest one you have is probably what's the one that Tony Scotto has there in Smithtown?
Begins with
Insignia, yeah. That's probably the closest. There's a J&R Steakhouse somewhere in, I think that's in Baiting Hollow or in Calverton. But that's sort of like Majors. It's a different level. It's a mid-priced place, you know. So there's really no place to get a hardcore prime, you know, yada yada steak for two or whatever. So we're going to do that. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a beautifully restored building. I mean, it's gorgeous. There's an outside patio, the seats about 60 or 70. And then behind the barn, there's an area that, you know, that they haven't really used, but you could have a little party going on out there. You could have a musician out there, you know, whatever. So anyway, the place lends itself to an awful lot of, a lot of uses. And I think it's going to be a fun project. We'll see what happens.
So now, isn't one of your other restaurants on Main Road?
Amano.
And how close to Amano is South Hold?
15 minutes, 12 minutes, something like that. Yeah, it's not far. You know, once you get on the fork, it's everything's pretty close. I mean, Greenport Orient is out there. That's like going to Montauk. You know, it's the North Fork to me is just such a beautiful place. I mean, I lived in East Hampton forever. You know, on and off, and it reminds me of what East Hampton was before it got too entitled and popular and all these McMansions were being built, and I understand that it's a gorgeous place and everybody wants to be there, but the North Fork I think has learned some of the development lessons that the South Fork has made, and you see it's a much more, I mean, there's money out there for sure, but it's a much more reserved crowd. It's not as flashy and I don't know how to explain it. It's a little more countrified still, you know.
So how does one of these restaurants come together? Now, first of all, is your partner Michael Meehan?
No. My partner is Adam.
Okay.
Michael actually works with me now. Michael handles most of my catering, my off-premise catering.
Okay. Because when I did a quick Google search, or I was on the Google, as my father would say, it said that at one point you had done a pop-up with Michael Meehan there.
I did, yeah. Michael, you know, for those of you who don't know who Michael Meehan is, Michael is, he's probably 30% responsible for restaurants on Long Island that took the step and went into more of like a city feel, like an upscale feel. Michael opened up the Mill River Inn. I'm guessing it was in the 90s, probably the early 90s, and late 80s, early 90s. And it was a jewel box of a restaurant. It was a 3-4-star thing. He was doing, you know, menus changing all the time. Michael's an uber-talented chef. And, you know, he's had other restaurants, Tupelo Honey and Clearwater, and over the years he's, but now he's kind of like semi-retired. He plays a lot of music. He has a band. He does open mic nights. But he handles my catering for me in the summer. He does all the prep work. And, you know, when we do off-premise weddings and stuff, Michael's the guy. So Michael and I get together. I mean, we were inseparable for a long time, for like 25, 30 years. And then, you know, due to, you know, business stuff and this, that, and the other thing, you know, families, whatever, you know, his kids were born, and then, you know, paying attention to all of that. We kind of, like, didn't drift apart, but we don't see each other as much as we used to. And then, a few years back, you know, when he kind of decided he was going to semi-retire, he came and worked with me, and now he, like I said, he handles all the catering and stuff that we do from Amano and social. So it's great to have him, because he's A, you know, very talented, B, responsible, C, he's experienced, he knows his way around a kitchen on premise and off premise, and he's a dear friend. So you know, yeah, man, love having him around.
That's
great.
A pretty cool story.
Yeah, it is. We were like, you know, we were like frickin' frack. I mean, we were to the point where, you know, he would sniffle, I would sneeze, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, we used to go away together and, you know, these food festivals and stuff, and just, you know, talk about restaurants and food endlessly. So he was a good compatriot.
Have you come to any conclusions on your Nassau County?
I don't think that's happening. You know, I'm kind of this way, that way about it. And I think so is the owner. You know, he's a wonderful man, and he's got his challenges there. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. Frankly, it wouldn't break my heart not to do it. You know, it's a commitment of time, and I don't have a lot of it. You know, and if it's a really fun project like the one out east, then I'm inclined to do it. If it's going to be just not drudgery is probably a too strong a word, but if it's going to be a lot of hard work and, you know, and minimal return, I'm like, you know. Maybe not. You know, I got enough problems with the stuff I have, so we'll see what happens.
Thinking of that part of Long Island, I bumped into JoJo from Bagel Boss.
How's he doing?
He's doing good. He said to say hello.
I love JoJo. Good guy.
The former Kingfish has gone through some evolutions.
Has it?
And I think they're redoing it again.
Are they? It's a tough spot, you know. We had an interesting run there. I mean, in the beginning it was busy. Everybody has a honeymoon period, obviously, you know. Me included. Then it kind of faded down a little bit, and then it started to really get strong. You know, there were issues there, parking issues, whatever, valet issues, but it started to get really busy, and then COVID hit, and that was just the end of it. And to their credit, the people that owned the building, the Beachwood people, they bought it back. They didn't have to, which was very nice of them, and you know, because we started to lose a bunch of money there during the COVID thing. You know, they restored us to almost whole, you know, which was very nice. And I guess then they opened up whatever it was, at Juniper or something, I think, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Good memory.
I don't know what happened with that, you know.
Well, they're doing something new, and it's being done by a high-end restaurateur, but they're not going to make that location high-end because it won't survive there. But that was just an interesting concept. But as I say that, we'll get into it. It was not a hotel. It was a residence. It was condos.
They did have hotel rooms, though. There was like 6 or 7 rooms there that were you could rent out by
because
the week. Or,
it had to feel, you know, it was a restaurant on the first floor of primarily an apartment building.
Well, the model is, you know, they do that in Florida. You know, you get these condo units where, you know, you have Daniel Blute has a place, Danielle down there, you know, at 8 in West Palm or whatever, Palm Beach. And the model's, it's a great idea. I mean, you look at the one that they did on Merrick Avenue there where the shed is.
Well, that's where I was just going.
Well, so that's a decent location because, you know.
So again, so the restaurant was in the on the first floor of an apartment, a large apartment complex.
Yeah.
And they also had like a snack bar or something, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure.
So recently I did go over to, it's Westbury Avenue across from Eisenhower Park.
And Merrick Avenue.
And it's a whole complex.
Yeah.
And I guess, like you were saying, there's the shed, and now there's Farm Italy.
Uh-huh.
And what was interesting, and I don't know if it was all about the fact that...
They're the same owners, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
John Tunney. Yeah. But it was funny because it seemed like the club restaurant for the complex.
Yeah.
It was the ambiance of that. I mean, it's gorgeous. I mean, the complex is gorgeous. I'm
sure they built great
the apartments or the condos are very expensive or whatever.
They're very nice.
You know, it's like in an alleyway of the complex, at least Farm Italy, and you walk in, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But I got the feel, I guess we dined there maybe on a Sunday night, and I'm not usually a big Sunday night going out guy, but it was...
Chinese food?
Pretty very funny. It was pretty crowded, and it looked like it was the type of thing, if we got there at 6:37, and I had to push hard to get a reservation, it was... cranking there, but it was almost like there's an early crowd. Again, it reminded me of Florida because it was like it seemed like there was
the 4:30 group.
The so-called residents were there with their family members because the tables there was an assortment. It was definitely families, you know. It was like the parents and their children,
sure,
who had their children with them. Mm-hmm. So it just had a different feel than going into Insignia,
sure,
or you know Blackstone type of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was cool. The ambiance, again, I didn't get to the shed yet, but I heard that's a cranking restaurant, too.
Well, they got a great location there. I mean, you know, Merrick Avenue is busy. It's, you know, you're at a hub there. And you know, now you have this apartment complex with a built-in clientele, you know. You have that big condo unit back there where the Raceway was, you know. I mean, that's my hood, right? So I grew up 2 minutes from there, right? So I know that area real well. And that's kind of what I thought about Kingfish, you know, and I knew there were parking issues there and it would be valet or whatever. And it was off the street, so it was kind of hard to find if you didn't know it was there. It's, you know, it's a full block off.
I will admit, yes.
Yeah.
The first time I came, it was on a rainy night trying to find the place.
Yeah, yeah. It, you know, if I had it to do all over again, you know, would I have done it? I don't know. I probably would have second thoughts, but, you know, I like the Beechwood guys. I got a good feeling with them.
You had an interesting menu there. First of all, the decor was, I can't explain, I have trouble explaining things. The decor, it was very industrial chic.
It was kind of industrial meets oyster bar.
Yes, and that be said, you had fish and chips that were came out to you in newspaper.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we had an oyster bar there. It was fun. I mean, I liked that restaurant. I thought it was a cool place. And I think if it was in any, if I took that and replanted it in Huntington or even where the shed is, you know, I think it would have done fine.
It was so well thought out, though. You walked in, and in front of you was a raw bar.
Mm-hmm.
To the left was a social bar.
Yep.
It was just, and then to the right was your main dining room, I guess. But I don't know if the intentions were... But if I'm not mistaken, behind the raw bar was like a patio that must have been for the pool and stuff that's there. So I don't know if you served outside.
Yeah, it was an outdoor area for the summer. No, it was the perfect setup. And Sharon DeLago, a friend and Uber designer, I mean, she's so good. You know, she was the one that set that up. I mean, she built Jewel for us and Kingfish. She did a fabulous job on the inside. I think the thing was
gorgeous.
Subway
tile, that small octagonal or round tile.
No, it was a gorgeous place. And, you know, again, it was the right place in the wrong spot, you know. And I think we would have overcome that, honestly, because, like I said, it was getting very busy. And then the COVID came, and that was the end of pretty much everything, you know, for a while. So it was a mess. But like I said, the guys at Beechwood, very honorable people, the Dub family, and they're high end, you know, they're classy right to the end. They build classy places, they do classy contracts, they're first class people. I can't say enough about them. They're fabulous.
Well, good. So let's take a break.
Yeah, we're going to sell some time here, right?
Yeah, just remember, it's football season. We're deep into it, the playoffs. Smoking Al's.
Yeah, ribs,
thank you,
man,
for being our sponsor. And you got that poo-poo platter that's made for football gatherings.
I'm still concerned about the spelling of that.
Come on now, everybody, get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Bring the whole gang for Al's new grand feast, which includes the new smoking poo-poo platter, haystack stack onions, barbecue nachos, chicken wings, and a whole lot of barbecue meats, baby back ribs, lots of sides, and cornbread. The feast keeps on coming. A whole lot of fun for any type of group get-together. Available in dining room or takeout. Smoking Al's, Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show, with your host, Tom Shordell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
And narrator of all things positive, Stu.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I love Smoking Al's. He does such a great job there, man. And you know, for those of you who don't know the Smoking Al's story, he started off in the garment business. I mean, he was, you know, putting buttons on shirts or whatever the hell he was doing over there on the West Side. But he somehow stumbled into the restaurant business and made it happen. And for those of you who've never tried that, I'm going to tell you, it ain't easy. It's a 1 in 100 shot, you know. So good going, Al. You pulled it off.
There you go. So I was at a catering hall the other night. It was
recognition. You were very close to the other one.
It was a recognition dinner for Nassau County Police Commissioner Patrick Ryder. He was awarded the title of Irishman of the Year. So it was a room.
I could do 10 minutes of stand-up on what you'd have to do to become Irishman of the Year in all kinds of trouble.
No, first of all, it was a great night. A lot of respect to Commissioner Ryder. That you had fire departments, you had law enforcement from all over the tri-state. And it was in Anton's
Queens
Village.
Yeah.
And it's funny, just a quick funny story. We had some friends that were coming in from the city, and they were trying to figure out how they were going to get there.
Yeah.
Because they were going to take the train somewhere and then Uber over. As it turned out, the train station is across the street.
Oh, there you go.
So they literally walked down the steps and into the...
The Uber couldn't have cost much then.
No, not at all. So, lo and behold, there was a lot of Irish whiskey there. But the one thing, it was an interesting event. I'm not used to events where there's no cocktail party. So this was, you walked into the main dining room and the buffet was already going.
Right.
And then there was the bar. So it's funny because some people look at an event differently. Some people, as soon as the room opened, grabbed the plate, walked over.
No, run to the buffet table.
And we're eating. And actually, there was so much of that there was a line, like
really?
20 seconds after they opened the door. And then there were the other people that were networking. Usually my MO is the networking aspect of it. And it's torture because I always like the food, but I'm also there.
Yeah, to work.
You know, to work because my networking leads me to the ability to sell advertising.
Yeah.
So, but at any rate, they had anything from, you know, cheese and...
store-bought?
I guess it's considered dried fruit. You know, they had the papaya, pineapple, or whatever.
Yeah.
And they had a rollatini that they said it's their style, but it was almost like a creamy sauce on top rather than just melted cheese, which was different or whatever. But the one thing that got to me was they had a tray that I went back to find out what they called it, but it was Irish sausage. But it looked like a hot dog. And it just, I was trying to figure out.
I'm going to put that in my routine.
What does that pair with? You know,
beer.
No, I know, but you know, the typical catering menu is pasta.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like pepper steak.
Yeah, it's inexpensive stuff.
Right, but so I'm a picky eater at this point. So I ended up having to sort of create my own dish. They had a tilapia or something that was very nice, and I had some rice with it.
Yeah.
So I salvaged the meal. But I'm still trying to figure out what you're supposed to do with the Irish sausage.
Pass. Just pass on it and go on to the next item.
Because it wasn't even like a German sausage, like a bratwurst or anything.
Yeah.
It looked like a breakfast sausage, but just like two of them together. Like it was like a hot dog.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was no roll for it, and there was no mustard for it. I was very, very confused.
Yeah, no, that's a... So let me tell you a quick story. You know, you're talking about the shortest Uber ride in the world, right? I had it.
No, I'm going to beat you. You tell your story, I'll tell you mine.
You want to go first? Because I'm telling you, I'm going to kick your butt.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm flying into Charlotte to meet Carrie. She's already been down south. Mm-hmm. I'm flying in from LaGuardia or JFK or whatever. I get to the airport. She can't pick me up because she's still doing business.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, but I'm not far away. She's in a, lack of a better description, a strip mall of office buildings, you know, one-story things or whatever. My means of using Uber is, Carrie, please book it. I'll reimburse you.
Yeah, yeah.
So at any rate, here I am on my own. So I do what I'm supposed to do. It tells me somebody's coming. The guys, we're in Charlotte, and the driver didn't speak fluent English.
Mm-hmm.
So I get in the car, nice car, everything is good. He goes 20 feet, and he pulls over. He goes, we're here. Somehow, I put in the meetup area.
Uh-huh.
As my pickup and my, you know, destination was the terminal. So I'm not exaggerating. I got in at one end of the terminal and he stopped because he goes, I think something's wrong, sir.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I want to know how you beat that.
All right. So I'm in Austria.
And understand, the guy didn't speak English well.
I'm in Austria, right? And we're in the city of Krems, and I was there with a bunch of people on a wine tour, right? And one of the guys I was with was this restaurant owner from Brooklyn. Good guy, character and a half. So he goes, listen, man, dude, I've been in Krems, you know, it's kind of way you talk, yeah, like hip, you know. He goes, yeah, dude, listen, I've been in Krems before, and I know all the bars there. I'm going to go out tonight. You're welcome to come, but, you know, if you can't keep up with me, man, I'm just going to drop you there somewhere, you know. I'm a professional drinker. I know all about that, right? I said, I know what's going to happen. Just write your room down, because someplace I'll deposit you later, right? So we're out, you know, bouncing back and forth between these wine bars and whatever restaurants, and he gets to liking this woman that he met, right? And now they want to go here. So I'm kind of with them. And finally, I feel like a third wheel. So finally, I begged out at the last place. I'm not doing this anymore. Now it's like 3 a.m, right? I got to get back to my hotel, right? So all I have is the business card. So I go out on the street. There's nobody on the street. And I hear this, like this car coming, you know? And I see it's a cab. And I jump out in the middle of the roadway, and I'm flagging him down. The guy stops, right? And I hand him the card. I said, I have to go here. And he gives me this, is interesting as that German stuff is, I need to go here. And I jump in the back of the car. He goes, okay. He drives 7 feet, right? Stops the cab, and he's looking in the back. And I'm like, what? And he's pointing up. There's the sign to the hotel. I was in the hotel that I was supposed to be in.
Okay, you win.
So he goes, you know, that'll be 62 cents. I said, okay. And, you know, off I went.
So that story reminds me, I'm going to go on the wild side of my life. So when I got married, my honeymoon was to go to England and France. So we went to London.
Nice.
And we went to Paris.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know you were such a romantic, Stu.
Oh, yeah.
Look at you.
Look where it led to. So it's different in Europe than here. The cars are here are big. And I got married in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
It was the time of like huge Cadillacs.
Sure,
and, you know,
muscle cars.
Lincolns and stuff like that. So we're going to be away for 2 weeks. So I guess we had huge suitcases. We probably had a large check bag and,
sure,
and
yeah,
a
yeah.
carry-on or whatever.
Yeah.
But when we got to Paris, you know, they're driving around in Peugeots and whatever they're driving. So we go to take a cab, because there was no Uber in those days, to the hotel. We needed two cabs, one for us and one for the luggage or whatever. Lo and behold, I have my new bride screaming and yelling, oh, we're never going to see our stuff again. And now, that was just a prelude, but I thought it somehow it related to the story about the Uber.
Yeah.
But that was just a prelude to our stay in London, because somehow the engagement ring went down the sink.
Oh, no.
And I'm not joking, but my bride was threatening to jump off the balcony.
Oh, that's not good. You know, if you're married 20 years. Yeah.
Oh, this was 20 hours.
Yeah, that's not good. You don't want to lose them early.
That's interesting. Again, I don't know how the Uber story brought me there, but, you know, thank God I'm on a more level plane right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we had a woman lose her engagement ring in a toilet bowl in Amano, or so she said. Turned out that wasn't the case, but she said, you know, she came to me and she said, you know, I think I lost and it was a big one, too. It was like, I don't know, 3 carats or 4 carats or whatever it was. Down the toilet. Can you see if you can get it? I'm like, did you flush it first? And I don't want to know what I'm getting into here. You know, if I'm going to go shoulder deep into the toilet bowl, you know, I don't want any company. So anyway, it turns out that, and I'm saying to myself, you know, what speed and technique of wiping that you have to employ to dislodge a 6-carat diamond off your finger. You know what I mean? And isn't it, on the other hand, I'm assuming you're righty. You know, it's like, turns out that after the cops came, you know, and she wanted to, you know, strip search the entire, you know, waitress team, somebody stole it, you know. And, it was just this whole scene, right? Turns out, I find out later that she had lost it and didn't want to tell her fiance.
Oh.
So she copped this story, and, you know, it turns out that, you know, it's insurance issues or whatever. I don't know what it was. But after causing this entire, you know, throwing the whole restaurant into a complete cramp, it was insane.
So that sort of leads me to this. This was the same night as the commissioner's dinner. First of all, during the day, I'm at our office here in Farmingdale. And I'm meeting with my assistant, Janine, and we're preparing a proposal for a large client.
It's hard to say, preparing proposal.
Yes.
It's a lot of peas.
So we made a call to our associate who was working out of the office that day.
Yeah.
And we used my cell phone, and it was on her desk. And I usually have two phones. One is used like as an iPad, in a sense, because if I'm on the phone, much like when we're here in the studio, I'm busy researching stuff while we're going or whatever.
The other use for drug deals and stuff?
Yeah, yeah, of course. So one's like a burner phone. But at any rate, we're deep into conversation, and I'm looking for my phone. I can't find my phone. I run back because I want to look something up while we're on this conference call.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Lo and behold, I forgot that we were on the conference call on my phone. So again, that was one part of my day. Then I go to the dinner, and for whatever reason, I put my phones down, pick them up, whatever. And then we're in the dining room. It's just the beginning of the program.
Yeah.
And I break out in a cold sweat. I can't find my phone.
It's nothing worse.
Now, all I want to do is leave to... I remembered being in the lobby. This happens all the time, but you go somewhere, and one part of the footprint has reception, and then you go to another section and your phone is dead.
Oh, yeah.
It's the most frustrating thing. So I'm going, oh my God, I must have taken the phone out, put it down, left it there. And you know, I know it's here. I'm here with a room full of law enforcement. It's just going to be a pain in the butt to be able to reclaim
it. Which one of you guys stole my phone?
I just, you know, I'm going to have to go, you know, somebody holding it and going to call me tomorrow. Did they turn it in? I'm really starting to freak out.
Yeah.
And then I go to look at the program, and lo and behold.
There it is.
Yeah. But it just.
You know, I remember a day where we didn't have these things and it was no problem. Now, if I leave the house without the phone, I'm in a panic, you know? You're feeling yourself up. You're trying to, you know, where is it? It's in my pocket.
But, no, but I don't understand the most simple scenario is, you know, as a kid, I went to baseball games with, you know, my neighbor, adults, my neighbor, my father, my uncle, whatever. And you know, if I had to go to the bathroom or whatever, and then eventually, you know, I was going there myself when I was in high school to Shea Stadium or whatever. How the heck did we figure out how to meet up and do things?
I know. It was all, you know, by instinct or maps. You know. So I had a baseball story. I'm not a baseball guy. You know, I can watch a game if it's like important, like a playoff game or something like that.
And just before you get into it, but it's just funny because you jarred my memory. At this dinner the other night, there was a big check. I'm talking about big check.
Uh-huh.
It was like 3 feet, like two feet. The organization was giving money to Ireland so that they can learn how to play baseball.
Really? Yeah, I guess they don't play baseball. It was a little soccer, right?
Yeah, so segue to Tom's baseball story.
So I've been to 2 baseball games in my life as an adult. I went to a couple as a kid. My grandfathers took me, you know. 2 as an adult. One with my daughter when she was like, I don't know, 7 or 8. And 1, I went because a customer of mine gave me some seats and I felt obligated to go, right? So I was working in this restaurant years ago called Alexander's. It was where Colony Hill was in that building. Now it's a Hilton or something out there in Exit 57. And we had a maitre d' named Martin, who was a very kind of sophisticated, slick kind of guy. He was schooled in Italian restaurants, he used to do. And it was a kind of, back in the 70s now, where it was, you know, everybody was kind of doing tableside cooking and Caesar salads and all that stuff, flaming desserts, Roman coffee, all that stuff. And Martin was very good at all that. So the guys that hired me were basically mafioso guys who took over this restaurant. I knew one of them, and he says, you know, hey, he saw me in a restaurant that I was working at in Huntington. He says, hey, I just bought a place. I want you to come to work for me. I said, no, I'm happy here. He goes, I'll triple your salary. I said, I don't know, I start, you know. So I was working with these guys, and they brought a friend of theirs from the Bronx to be my sous chef, this guy Mario. And Mario was a good cook, but he just knew nothing other than Italian food, you know. So I was trying to teach him how to make hollandaise, which is kind of a tricky sauce. It's like making mayonnaise, you know. You got to cook the egg yolks and then add the oil and, you know, add the butter, you know, and you can break it. If it breaks, it's useless. You got to throw it out and start again. So Mario, every time he made a hollandaise, he broke it. I mean, every time. It was like, you know, he was like 100 for 100, you know. So I finally got him to the point where he would put the butter in slowly enough and have the eggs cooked right, and he was making it, right? So I go to this baseball game. It's like the second or third inning, and on a Jumbotron, I see this thing, Tom Shodell, please report to the security office. Tom Shodell, please report to the security office. Now I'm freaking out. I'm like, is it my mother, my father? What happened? My daughter, you know, whatever. I'm like, holy. I go running to the security office, right? And I said, what's going on? He says, there's a phone call from you, an emergency phone call. I pick it up. It's Martin, the maitre d'. He goes, I just want to let you know Mario broke the hollandaise. He goes, I'm like, I'm going to kill you when I get back out there, right? And of course, you know, the guy hits a home run while I'm in the office, you know, whatever. It was one of those things. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had your name called with 50,000 people there. It's a little disconcerting, by the way.
I am sure. I am sure. So this is a funny, another story that comes out of the out of the dinner I went to. So Commissioner Ryder is busy telling a story, very heartfelt. He was very reflective on his parents and his went through each of his family. And he goes, and, you know, one day my daughter comes home and she introduces me to her new boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
And his name is Alejandro.
Oh.
And he goes, you know, in this family, we give nicknames to everybody. From now on, you're Tom Kelly from the Irish family.
That's, all right, listen, well, we got to get going. We got to get out of here. It's almost time to, we've got a half a minute or so. But, yeah, you know, I still need to know what it takes to become Irishman of the Year.
I don't know, but I'm trying to become a Hibernian. And
what is that?
I guess it's an Irish society. I'm honored to have been given the responsibility of carrying the American flag down Fifth Avenue this past St. Patrick's Day parade. Uh-huh. And it was really the coolest experience. Not the easiest thing, because when you walk from probably was like 42nd Street up to 76th or 78th, if not higher, even though you have a holster and you're holding the flag, it gets heavy.
Heavy, I'm sure, yeah.
But it was really, really, really enjoyable. And I actually was carrying it for one of the, I believe they call it councils from Ireland.
Okay.
And we had the mayor and the village trustee. It was the coolest thing. But supposedly, if you're Hibernian, it's like an honored society.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not of Irish blood.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're not Irish, right?
But I'm leaning on the fact that Kerry is Irish.
Yeah, that's it.
And maybe I cut my finger and
there you go.
You know, intermingled blood or something. So
I think if you're together long enough, you know, you don't have to do the blood thing.
So we're trying to get it done.
All right. Well, on that note.
All about nothing.
All right. We're going to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which is life too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza.
And I'm hoping next week while you're away in San Francisco, our radio station family has a studio in San Francisco.
Maybe I'll be invited.
And it would be so cool to have you call me from San Francisco studios and we can record Playing with Fire.
All right, let me know how to do that. I will talk to you next week.
Come on now, everybody, get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Bring the whole gang for Al's new grand feast, which includes the new Smoking Poo Poo Platter, Hay Stack Onions, barbecue nachos, chicken wings, and a whole lot of barbecue meats, baby back ribs, lots of sides, and cornbread. The feast keeps on coming. A whole lot of fun for any type of group get-together. Available in dining room or takeout. Smoking Al's, Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.